Hi, I'm Paul Havershood, host of The Cost of Living. It's a show about money and how it shapes our lives. In big ways, like why inflation could get worse if we all make more money.
Here's the hard truth in all of this. Workers are going to have to eat that real wage loss.
And small ways, like what's the fastest way to order fast food?
That first Big Mac that comes out of the kitchen is going to the drive-thru.
Check out The Cost of Living. We're on CBC Listen or wherever you get podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
I'm Talia Schlanger, sitting in for Tom Power. Welcome to Q. You know this, you're listening to an arts show. One of art's greatest superpowers is it can transport you to somewhere new, somewhere that you've never been. And if you want to go to Lagos, Nigeria, Stephen Tayo will give you a sense of the culture, the fashion, and the daily life there through his eyes. He's a documentary and fashion photographer. His work has been featured in places like Vogue, New York Times, The Guardian. Stephen's photography ranges from Fashion Week street style to portraiture, and he takes most of it in Nigeria and other parts of West Africa. He showcases the diversity and the rich culture of the place he comes from. And he's taken photos of Nigerian superstars, too, like Burna Boy and Davido, for some of the biggest publications in the world. Now, Stephen has two photo series on display at the Harbourfront Center in Toronto. And he joined Tom Power a couple of weeks ago from Lagos to talk about his journey to becoming an acclaimed photographer, which started out when he was a kid. When he was growing up, Stephen didn't have a lot of photos of himself. And Tom started out by asking why.
Because of some circumstances, my mom was moving around into different apartments, and I think in that movement around, we lost some images, and including the one of myself and my siblings. So I kind of don't have a clear image of myself when I was a child. Really inspired me to really document everyday life.
What do we miss? What do you miss out on when you don't have a picture of yourself as a kid?
I think, you know, it's almost like a reflection of self, and like how the everyday life is also as important as anything else, you know, that we think of when we think about the good things of life.
Right. I think I understand what you mean. Like the idea that it's not just posed and fully composed moments that are the most important to us, because you didn't have photos of yourself growing up, because you didn't have photos of like everyday life growing up, of what your day-to-day life might have looked like, that inspires you into photography because you think, I want to capture some of this.
Exactly. So I think for me, is the idea of just being able to sort of capitalize on this moment as a way to archive and remember the transition of like stages of life.
You started out shooting on an iPhone, and you still shoot sometimes with an iPhone 14. What do you love about shooting on an iPhone?
It's just very instant. It's like, you know, you have your phone with you. You're not thinking too much about, you know, the battery or the light. So it's just like a mini camera, and it really serves the purpose, you know? And I think for me, the composition and the color and everything really is on that. So I think the idea of just, you know, thinking too much about the tools also makes it harder to start, you know. And I think in life, sometimes you don't really have it all. Just being able to use the tools I have brought me to where I'm at today.
When you first started taking photos, what were you taking photos of?
I remember it was pretty much things around me, like the color palettes of people's gates, you know, chairs and churches, my friends at uni. I studied philosophy at the University of Lagos, and sort of that atmosphere. And I think the school architecture was just so stunning that every day becomes almost like a test shoot in the university.
When you start taking photos of the world around you, whether it's your university or the city that you're in, do you see it differently than you did before?
It really doesn't change. And I think for me, I prepare almost my day routine, thinking about, you know, sort of observing almost the same thing I've seen. I mean, I was asking some of my friends the other day, we were talking about how would you be a photographer for life? And I told them, I don't think it's not tiring. It's literally part of my daily routine now, you know. So I think for me, it's like, how do I fall in love with this practice? Also, like, how do I also, like, expand, into, like, different sort of parts of photography? And in a way, like, it's also, like, can be a tools of communicating, diverse conversation amongst communities.
But it sounds like you were observant anyway. Like, I find that when I walk around with these two types of people, photographers or architects, and they can always show me things about the city that I live in, or some kind of nook or some kind of bird or some kind of color or some kind of statue that I've never, ever, ever noticed before. So I think I understand what you're saying, that, like, I asked you, did you see the world differently after you took photos of it? Or did you see Lagos differently when you started taking photos of it? But it sounds to me like you were kind of just an observant person anyway.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the change would come when you look at the archive. When you look at the archive, obviously, Lagos is not the same every day. Like, there are days where, the street is quiet. There are days where it's really bubbly. So I think when you go back home and you look at how you've been able to document these days and different sort of time of the season, I mean, then you realize the change. I mean, what photography sort of, makes it sort of do is for you now to see the changes. Obviously, maybe there's now, like, a new architecture, around the corner, or, like, they sort of improve the painting of the building, or there's, like, a new sort of, sort of juxtaposition. So those are the things that might change.
I love that so much. You mentioned you studied philosophy in university, and I've heard you talk a little bit about how philosophy comes into your work sometimes. I've had conversations with photographers before who have talked about, like, trying to feel like they're not extracting something from the people that they're photographing, The idea that they feel like they're collaborating with the people they're choosing as subjects. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about if your background in philosophy, specifically like philosophy's relationship with ethics, factors into how you mm-hmm. approach a subject or how you relate to a subject in a shoot.
I mean, I think this conversation should be more sort of like popularized. I mean, obviously, photography is an art, and art sometimes doesn't really care about ethics. In my case, I think it's really important to sometimes first think about, beyond thinking about those people as collaborators, you also have to think about them as yourself, And I think that's where a very quick ethic can come in place. I don't think when you look at ethics as a concept of morality, you then want to put yourself in people's position. I think when you bring the idea of ethics sort of closer to you, then you mirror the collaborators as yourself. I think I would encourage people to think more about, especially when they go into spaces that are not necessarily where they're from. And in as much as there's a lot of freedom in photography, and there should still be a huge place for ethics.
Can you give me an example of that? So, like, say, so you're taking a photo of somebody, and you said something like, "I don't just want to be seen as a collaborator with them. I want to put myself." It sounded like compassion to me. Like, I want to be able to put myself in their shoes. I want to be able to see. Like, mm-hmm. Can you give me an example of that?
I mean, there's one telling a story. There's also one telling a story with dignity. I mean, if I was to make a story, let's say in Ghana or when I was in Abidjan, in Ivory Coast, because also is a neighboring country to Nigeria, I wasn't really looking for something that would wow me, I was more interested in what makes Ivory Coast, Cote d'Ivoire, Ivory Coast. So I wasn't, really interested in something intense or insane, or I wasn't going there with an agenda of it has to be like, maybe what I've seen in the news. I think for me, it's like portraying people's story as authentic as it is with dignity. I think then revolves around the fact that it's not my place to change their story. I'm just an observer of the scene. I'm literally going into the space to document and observe.
I could not love that more. I totally get it. That's so beautifully put. And it leads me to think a little bit more about something I wanted to ask about anyway, which is your love of street style. You become a photographer known for photographing people just in their day-to-day outfits who look good. And you've talked about how some people you approach don't get why you're into their outfits at all. What is it? What do you find so exciting about street style?
I mean, I've lived in Lagos more than anywhere else in the world. And it's very interesting that, you know, what you find on the street of Lagos sometimes can only be seen on the street of Lagos.
Like so what? Like what?
For me, I mean, like some style, you know, like people dress up for every occasion. Like, you know, people dress up, actually like on Sundays, you know, you can see someone, you know, wear a suit and you can't place it. You can't place one, the designer, you haven't seen it on the runway before. You haven't seen it, you know, and also it's like a culture that really encourage a lot of custom made outfits. So there's a lot of like individualism in terms of how, you know, people stand out. So I think it's just like, you know, then Lagos become my studio, you know, like, I mean, walking around then becomes like my own sort of like a studio space and just sort of observing. And I think also what people wear or what we decide to wear has so much to say about the extension of where we are from. You know, I mean, how we look, how we choose to dress sometimes communicates the cultures or the history. And you can tell and we know from what people wear sometimes where they are from. You know, we know in the accessorizing, or sometimes in some sort of tattoo or body art, we kind of know where they're from, you know. Also considering that Nigeria is over to 30 million people.
Hey, I'm Talia Schlanger, sitting in for Tom Power. You're listening to Q. Coming up, more of Tom's conversation with Stephen Tayo.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I want to talk a little bit about the series we're here to talk about today, one of which is Which Lagos You Day, which is on display at the Harbour Front Center in Toronto right now. My guest is Stephen Tayo. So in the photos, one set of photos that really stuck out to me is these ones where you replace people with these sort of like anonymous figures, and they're draped in objects like sequins or scarves or ribbon. Can you tell me about these, like, and what you're trying to say in these photos?
The Which Lagos You Day in Pidgin English literally means what part of Lagos are you? In simple English. I think for me, I was very much also from a lot of observation of the street interested in how do I use, you know, the items found on the street to sort of create some sort of figure that Lagos is used to. So like in this, you know, some of the, you know, images in the series have, you know, sponges being juxtaposed with, you know, the taxi sign of Lagos. It's sort of like, you know, paying obviously like homage to Lagos, but also using the series to, you know, extend the conversation that exists, that even in Lagos, there's different kind of classes. And, you know, some of these objects also represent where people's class falls, you know. Yeah,
The textiles themselves, like the materials themselves, or the way the materials are used, they themselves on their own can represent the class distinctions, which are very prominent almost geographically in Lagos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think in a way it's also to respond to that, and also like respond to how these items then can become an identifier to this, you know, geographical zone, and also to create some sort of humor around you know, the usage of this dish. I think, you know, the feedback has been like, you know, this is very hilarious, this is funny, but also how do we sort of put everything in one? So like you create like some sort of social awareness that still makes people sort of laugh, but also carries, you know, some sort of message as regards Lagos. And also in this case, you know, when we think about like the geographical zone and also like the class system, it doesn't just relate to Lagos. So I think in a way, which Lagos today really is an experiment that can, you know, sort of serve as, you know, a wider observation beyond just Lagos.
Let me close off this way, and it's been so lovely to talk to you. As you mentioned, you know, Lagos is the most populous urban area in Africa. You know, it's impossible to look at like a community with a population that size and to pin anything down, you know, to sort of generalize in any way. So maybe the way I'll close things off is when people go to this Harborfront Center exhibit that we're talking about, is there something you want them to most appreciate about the Lagos that they're seeing? And is there something that you want them to appreciate about maybe their own home after they watch it?
I mean, I think because I believe, I mean, the people who are seeing it are not necessarily from Lagos.
Yeah.
People are from different descents, from the UK, from America, from, you know, even from Canada, as we might have it. So I think it's just to think about it and just be open. You know, sometimes I wonder what the viewers think about the work, you know.
Really?
I'm also still very curious, you know, because sometimes you don't get a chance to speak to them, you know. And sometimes people sort of still go find you maybe on Instagram or find your email address and sort of share some of the things that, you know, feelings that it brings to them. So I think, I hope people, you know, some resonate to the work. But also myself, I'm curious to know the feeling of people when they look at the work.
What do you hear when you get these DMs and these messages?
I mean, I think, you know, from the last, you know, couple of months, it's always been like, oh, I like, you know, just how authentic you keep things. I like how, you know, proud of your country you are. So I think for me, I mean, these are not the things that you expect. You know, it's like, for me, it's a career that comes with, you know, a lot of like, you know, sort of imbalance. So sometimes you feel good about yourself. Sometimes you're just like sort of exhausted. So I think these messages and emails means a lot. And like sometimes these are the kind of push that you need to sort of keep doing the story.
I'm glad, open to the public, right, Corey? This is open to anyone to go to in Toronto. I'm so glad people are going to get a chance to see this show. Thank you so much for making the time, especially so late at night. Thanks for making the time for us.
Yeah, thank you so much for your time. And also thanks to the team at Harborfront and for doing the amazing work. Thank you.
Stephen Tayo is a documentary and fashion photographer. He joined Tom Power from Lagos, Nigeria. That's it for this episode. But before we go, I wanted to tell you about our other podcast episode today. You can hear Tom's conversation with film and TV legend Regina King. She'll talk about playing Shirley Chisholm in a new movie. Shirley Chisholm was the very first Black person to seek nomination for a presidential campaign from a major party. She was also the first Black woman elected to U.S. Congress. Regina will tell you why she wanted to take on the role and also why she held the film to release it during a U.S. election year. You can catch that in your podcast feed. I'm Talia Schlanger, sitting in for Tom Power. I'll see you next time.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.